Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic. It is season time here, and we have been staying in the house, watching TV, making a list, and checking it twice. And somebody who's always naughty and never on the nice list is my co-host in this show. You know him, you love him. He's the proprietor of the Raynham Flea Market booth A89 and 90, known as Saturday Morning Collectibles. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for renowned author John Cimino. Say hello, John. That'll do. All right, Johnny. Thanksgiving's over. It's Black Friday. But we couldn't wait to tell the listeners about some amazing television program. You and I both watched this last week. So we're going to devote this whole episode to a review of Netflix's brand new Marvel series, The Punisher. Right? Okay. This will be the best episode you've ever heard if you stick to that.
Well, Mitchie, I got something to say. As you know, on the last episode, I did a huge rant on how I'm all done with Marvel. Forget about it. I'm all DC'd now. All of a sudden, I'm a turncoat. All of a sudden, I needed something to jolt me back to where I belong. And the Punisher did it. It brought me back to the house of ideas, Mitchie. Well, Mitchie Kennedy. I'm happy. We're all happy.
I gotta say, you did send a chill down the spine of all the listeners out there, and especially Scott Martin, who was looking to fill your shoes as permanent replacement co-host of the Power Cosmic Podcast. Did you listen to Scotty's show? He did a very good job.
Yeah, he did a good job after I woke up about 3 or 4 times. You know, you kind of nod off, and you wake up, and you nod off again. You know how it is.
Oh. Come on. I got to admit, when I interviewed with Scott at the New Jersey Comic Expo last Saturday, and I said to him, what was the funniest thing you ever heard John Cimino say? And he said, hello. I couldn't stop laughing. I'm still laughing thinking about that. That was this pure Scott Martin. It was genius. He was pretty good. People loved him. He's jovial. He was well accepted by the press. The fans knew him. He was recognized by a couple people. You know.
It's a good time, Mitchie. It was a good time.
He tried to do John Cimino, actually. He actually impersonated you at one point.
Can I be impersonated, Mitchie?
He tried. It was an attempt. But anyway, you did get me scared. I was worried that you were never going to come back to the house that Spider-Man built. You're treading into DC territory. Did last a mere week, but how was it on the dark side?
It, like I said, I mean, hey, I was distraught with Marvel. The way that they're making the Hulk. Yeah, I can't do it. I'm gonna lose all I know any day over that guy. I mean, I got enough of that. But yeah. Like I said, I was walking that lonely road, sticking my thumb out with the lonely man theme, you know, getting a hitchhiker, getting out of town, going town to town to try to help people. Then lo and behold, the Punisher hits, and John starts hitting back.
Could it also be the fact that your longtime nemesis that was over at Marvel, the EIC, I think editor-in-chief, was his creative control, whatever his official title, Axel Alonso, who brought about the last 10 years or so of Marvel's current storylines, is no longer with the company. Was that anything to do with your change as well?
Actually, I think it's been 12 years, Mitch.
Yeah, I think it was 12, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, he's been horrible. You know what? I know they had this guy, CB, he's...
CB Cebulski, correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I guess he's a Disney guy. So obviously, they're going to want to put their guys in there. And I'm sure he can do a better job, because I got to admit, Axel has been one of the worst editors in chief ever. I mean, and he's just had the ball for so long. And you know what? I'm going to say two things. Nobody was going to really save comics from getting huge sales, because I think it's a dying medium. But he kind of like opened up the ditch and pushed them all in there before he should have. I think he's the worst editor-in-chief of all time. That's what I think. He's like the Howard Mackey of writing. Remember Howard Mackey? He wrote Spider-Man for 100 years. I don't know if anybody wrote longer. Maybe Dan Slott beat him now, but back in the 90s, 2000s, he wrote forever, and it was the worst writing of Spider-Man and the worst sales of Spider-Man ever.
That was
so,
the Clone Saga stories, wasn't it?
What's that?
Wasn't that the Clone Saga?
You said it, not me. I should slap that fat mouth of yours. Horrible. Maximum Carnage. It just goes on and on and on. It's just the worst ever. But that's what Axel Alonso, for some reason, he had the ball for so long. Somebody was just like, we got to stop this. So finally they took Howard. He was writing all those issues of Spider-Man, wasn't he?
Yeah, I remember The Mark of Cain. Ben Reilly, Scarlet Spider.
I was working at That's Entertainment at that time. It was a big store in Worcester, probably one of the best stores on the East Coast. Anyways, I was working there, and I remember sitting at the cashier, and I was like, I can't believe Spider-Man is uncool. Like, it was such a dreadful time for Spider-Man. X-Men was obviously the biggest thing in the world, but Spider-Man really soured, and it was Howard Mackey. It was just story after story after story. The death of Aunt May. I mean, it just goes on.
They would come out with miniseries. Venom became a hero. Then they realized they needed a guy worse than Venom, so they came up with Carnage. It was just out of control. And the thing is, like you said, I kept buying them, wondering when the story was going to end. Because,
you are a junk.
Oh, stop. I mean, it went on for years, and I'm not kidding you. And truth be told, it's been said that the marketing department is who really was to blame. They got involved with editorial and said, just keep making more of it. And that's why the story went on so long. That's what I'd heard.
Yeah, and then it just went on. And then I just remember that it was such a dreadful time for Spider-Man. And so Axel Alonso is like the Howard Mackey of editor-in-chief, because he was just doing it for like 12 years, and it was just, you could see the shift. I mean, right after, I got to give Quesada some props, I mean, I know people love him and hate him too, but I mean, he made moves that actually stimulated the market again that hasn't been seen. It took it out of the doldrums of the 90s. But then once he left and they gave him that chief creative officer, whatever position they gave him, and they put Axel in there, it just kept going bad, down and down and down and down.
Well, that's going to be something to see. Now, C.B. Cebulski, I have a little personal connection to this, because my late friend Dan Yance went to school here in Easton, Connecticut, at the Helen Keller School, and he went to school with C.B. Cebulski, and his brother Roman Cebulski lives right down the street from me here in Trumbull, so it's kind of funny. But Dan would always talk to C.B. and try to get him to come to the various comic book conventions I produced over these years, and he was always eager to come back to Connecticut just to say hello to his family, because they still live here. But who knows, maybe we'll be able to have an editor-in-chief at this year's Terrificon, C.B. Cebulski. That would be kind of cool. Anyway, you're back from the dark side like Luke Skywalker. You turned on it. You threw your lightsaber down. You refused to walk down the path of the go-go checks. But Justice League was good, but it did not lure you. It opened. They readjusted the numbers. $94 million. Like I said, I was going for $85. You were going for over $100, or at least $100, so kind of in the middle there, but like The Price is Right, you claim you won. So that's that. So we'll see. This week's usually a 60% drop-off on box office, so I think the Justice League is about to take a hit more powerful than anything Darkseid could ever throw at him.
Yeah, because I think what that is, the Omega Beam is going to be Coco. I think it's that movie Coco that the kids are going nuts for.
Yeah, the kids are looking for it. But anyway, we got to breathe and accept what's going on, John. We just got to take it as it comes. One day at a time, as the friends who like to take it too
one
much.
One day at a time, but I'll tell you, let's go right
let's into go it. Into it, because last week I was busy. I was at two different conventions, but I started watching The Punisher, and I texted you, and I was a little worried because the first episode, let's just go episode by episode. First episode, we meet Frank Castle. He's presumed dead from after the events, I guess, that happened over in Daredevil 2, because I said, do I have to go back and watch?
Let me stop you for a second. I just want the listeners to know, when me and Mitch watch these, like back-to-back-to-back series, we'll always text each other. What? Yes. I've just finished episode 2. Just finished episode pop, 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 pop. So we're always feeding each other. So I just want them to know. So go ahead, though, Mitch.
No, that's exactly right. So it's almost a race to see who'll get to the end, because I don't want to get it ruined by you, because you've done that sometimes. But anyway, the first episode was an introduction to the character. I really think they said, maybe not everybody watched Daredevil 2. Maybe not everybody knows who Frank Castle is. So let's do a standalone episode back in the day like we had as a kid. So it was a first issue special. That's the way I look at it. You?
Oh, I thought it was perfect. Like I said, I fell right back into it. Because first, let's just talk about this. Casting. Casting, casting, casting. I always say this. I can get into if I look at a comic book, if the art is bad, I don't care how good the story is, I can't get into it. But if the art is good and the story is bad, I can still get into it. That comes down to casting. If I believe in these characters, like I believe in that actor, I can get into it. But I got to admit, I think John Bernthal is one of the greatest. He's got to be up there with some of the greatest castings of superheroes. I'm talking up there with Chris, yes, Gal Gadot. You can tell he just lost himself in the role. Like from, let's just say from like his inner turmoil to his screams, his grunts, the way he walks,
yeah.
Like he's got his arms out, like he's always on edge, but yet he's got that sensible heart. I mean, I fell right into him. I loved him, Mitchie. I fell in love.
I agree with you. I met the man years ago when he was working on The Walking Dead, and it wasn't then, but they did. He was played an ex-cop or a person in the post-apocalyptic zombie apocalypse, and I remember watching him, though he did play it with a bit of a southern accent. I said, you know, this guy would be good as the Punisher, because he had that Marine military look with the shaved head, the crew cut, and he was a very violent guy. I'm like, yeah, he would really be.
And don't forget the broken nose.
The broken nose, like the boxer, and like the perfect John Romita Jr. nose. And I said, he would be a good Punisher. And then when they cast him in Daredevil Season 2 as the Punisher, it was like, oh, dream come true. Because I think even the casting director realized what everybody else saw, that this guy was a great Punisher. And he wasn't like, if you look at the previous Punishers, Dolph Lundgren, I think that was an attempt. That was back in the 80s. They weren't really comic book focused. He was out of worked, but the story just, well, he didn't even have the skull on his chest until the last scene. It never was going to happen. Then we had Thomas Jane as the Punisher, but they set it in Florida. They brought John Travolta in as the bad guy. Big misstep there. Though Thomas Jane's a great actor, not really cast well as the Punisher. Then we had Ray Stevenson, who was Volstagg in the Thor movies, and he's been on a bunch of other shows, big heavy guy. That kind of captured some of the violence of the Punisher stories, Punisher Warzone, but it really made no sense. There was no motivation. But like you said, when they do the flashback scenes, and we'll talk about that here, you hit the nail on the head when you called me up. The reason why this show works so well is Frank Castle wants to die. He's lost his wife and two kids. And he just goes on day to day. He gets up and he doesn't know if he's going to make it through the other day. But if you kill them, he wouldn't care. He really doesn't care. And that is unbelievable, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good. And how he's always kind of in and out of reality. That's how, if you were to give me, like, John, make me a script, give me some bullet points for a script I'm going to do with the Punisher, that would be one of them. I would be like, he's got to go in and out of reality, and he always sees his wife, like, when things are going wrong or things are happening to him, like, he comes in and out. And, like, that's his motive, because that's his motivation. And I love how they made him, like, yeah, he has, like, a little attraction to Karen Page.
Yeah.
And he had the wife of Microchip, yeah, who was also a great character. But, like, I love how, yeah, the Punisher wouldn't make love to these people because he loves his wife.
Right, you know, he's still married.
Yeah, he's got no time for any of that other stuff.
Right.
Like, and I love how they showed that human element of him. That was great, too, because he wasn't just this murderous killing machine, which that you, when you, if you can make the Punisher that, then you're going to kind of lose people because you're not going to really care about him. But you got to see his pain, and, like, he did feel like he cared about them. Like, if you remember with Karen in the elevator, they had that tension. It was that little sexual tension there and all that.
Yeah.
Like, you thought they were almost going to kiss and there was a love between them, but you can see it's never going to happen.
No, so, and you know what? There's enough. He's got a lot of subtle sense of humor about him, too. He reminds me of the actor Fred Ward, who used to be in the 80s, who played Remo Williams and was in a bunch of movies. He almost looks like him. If they could cast father and son, Fred Ward would be a perfect father for this guy because he physically looks like John Bernthal, you know?
Well, absolutely. But those are the elements that you love that makes the Punisher. I told you, Mitch, this is the only series I ever watched that I had to watch it again. And
really?
I'm going through it again. Let's just throw this out there. I didn't finish Jessica Jones. I didn't finish, and I went to number 12 on Iron Fist. I watched all the Defenders. I watched all the Power Man. I watched all the two Daredevils. But even after the Daredevils, like, even the second season, which I liked the best, even after that, I was kind of, I never wanted to see it again. The Punisher one, I wanted to see it again. Like, I was so ingrained. And I loved the casting across the roof. Okay, here's another one. Microchip could have easily been a character that kind of could have been a dull character.
Yeah,
that
a little
kind
nerdy
of,
computer geek, yeah.
Yeah, he could have been just, but they gave him such depth that you actually cared about him, too. And I love that little triangle that, you know, Frank was at his house.
Yep.
And, like, you know, he's, and, like, maybe he had a little sexual tension there with his wife, too. I mean, but that guy was perfect casting, and he was perfectly written because you cared about him, too, and he genuinely loved Frank and wanted to help him. And I love when they did their covert ops together, like, how Frank got out of those situations sometimes. It's almost like how Batman did. You know, he had Alfred, only to kind of, he's got that voice in the ear, and I love that.
Well, there was a couple times Microchip towards the end, he almost resembled the late actor Gene Wilder from Willy Wonka. And I said, wow, if they ever redid the Gene Wilder story or Willy Wonka, they should hire this guy because he had that crazy hair and look to him. But anyway, let's go back. Like I said, the first episode, the world thinks he's dead. I don't even know exactly. Like I said, I can't remember how they killed him off. I remember there was an explosion in the first movie. He killed some general, and Karen Page was involved, so maybe they just assumed he was dead. And because he broke out of jail. Remember the Kingpin broke him out of jail in Daredevil Season 2? And then he went out and helped fight ninjas, and it was all over the place. But this one almost does not have a connection. Other than Karen Page, it didn't even seem like the same world that Iron Fist, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage lived in. It almost seemed like a brand new Marvel universe. And like I told you, I couldn't imagine that Tony Stark and the Avengers were like five blocks down the road at Stark Tower.
Yeah, wasn't it like a darker place?
It was like the Marvel Knights book, which was a line of books that came out in the 90s.
Yes,
more of a serious tone, yeah. But like I said, it opens up with him almost like a Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk. He's working as a construction worker. He's got a beard. He's calling himself Pete Castiglione, and he basically wants to get on with his life. He doesn't want to get sucked back into that world of killing people, and he just keeps to himself. He's a loner. He doesn't want to get involved. And then this kid on the construction site starts, you know, friending him and giving him a sandwich and tries to be pals with him, and they both have a common interest because the kid's dad was a Marine, and we all know Frank Castle was a Marine, and the kid's parents were killed in a drive-by. And then suddenly Frank Castle perks up when he hears that because, Frank Castle, as the Punisher's mission, is to punish the evil. And anybody who's a criminal, he's going to take you down. So I think he takes care of that kid once he finds out that his parents were lost. And then the kid gets involved with some of these other shady construction workers who are going to pull a heist on a poker game, a mob poker game, and they do, and the kid drops his wallet, and they know his ID, so now the gangsters are after him, and now the other construction worker guys want to kill him because, you know, he blew their whole heist. And then Frank Castle shows up, and it was just insane. He fights him with a sledgehammer. You know, no gun, but a sledgehammer, and he just goes nuts. And the funny thing is, when John Bernthal hulks out, you know, like Bill Bixby would hulk out, or berserker, mm-hmm. or when he has that berserker rage in the Wolverine comic mm-hmm. books, he screams like this guttural, like growl, like an animal, and it's insane. He just, it's like, it's almost
and
like
you
he's,
believe it, and you believe it.
Like, oh, I know. It's almost like he's trying not to do it. You know what I mean? It's like painful, like he's trying to hold himself back. And that's why he's screaming so much, but then he just lets himself go, and he just goes nuts, man.
It's like when he was hitting the sledgehammer against the wall, too, and you would take out his anger and that rage inside of him, like hitting the wall, and he'd be like, Oh, and Mitch, let's just throw this out there, too. Being a Disney movie, they could have kind of easily went the PC, SJW crap, and we talked about this. They had to appeal, like, you can't water down the Punisher, and they had to appeal to the military, because military people love the Punisher, you know, people who, hunters and all that, they all wear that skull, and they were total, National Rifle. You could tell they were pro-gun, like, they kind of appealed to that audience. They could have simply made them water down, and they didn't. That's why I'm going to give a big kudos to Disney for actually going full on with the Punisher. They didn't sugarcoat anything.
No, you can't do a story about the Punisher and make him anti-gun. I mean...
Right. You know. They threw a little of that element in the story, but I loved it how even Karen Page was a gun holder and all. Like, you can tell they went for that target audience.
And then they had the senator who was, you know, doing the lip service with the no guns and all this, too, so... Yeah, it was interesting the way they played it. And he didn't always kill people with a gun. He used a sledgehammer in that part of the story, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like he had an arsenal, an armory with thousands of weapons around him, you know?
And the thing, I got to admit this about all those Netflix stuff. All those Netflix series, is what make them so good is you don't know who's going to live or die by the next episode. Like,
yeah.
When people are gone, case in point, Ponyboy, who you didn't realize in the first two episodes.
We still see Thomas Howell. That was his name.
Yeah, you didn't know it was him. And he gets off in the second episode, killed by the Punisher.
Yeah, well, okay, so let's go back. The story, it starts off, like I said, that standalone David Banner episode where he doesn't want to get involved, and he does it. And I said, wow, if the whole 13 episodes are just going to be him traveling around, you know, getting sucked into one other adventure after another, it's going to fall apart really quick. And then it went flashback to this story about him being in Kandahar and Afghanistan and these other soldiers, and there was a drug operation going on. And I'm like, wait, now it's going to get into this Jason Bourne thing. And I was starting to get tuned off, and I said, this is going to be boring. And then we find Microchip, who says a whole network of cameras around the city in New York, and he's watching Frank Castle, and he knows who he is. And then Karen Page steps back into the story. So suddenly you're watching this, you go, okay, maybe this is going to get good. But then they diverge and they go to a friend of his who's a counselor for PTSD soldiers, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, or whatever it is. And so there's another character, and I'm like, he was a great actor too. And all the guys are sitting around talking about how hard it is to get back into the real world and nightmares and all that.
We talked about, Mitch, about the father and the Sunday.
That's what I'm saying. So we meet this other character named Lewis, who's this kind of nerdy character who joined the service, hoped to be made a man, and he's having a tough time, and he can't get a job. He gets fired from the job that Frank Castle's old war buddy, Billy... Oh, I can't think of his name right now. Billy something. He makes this like private security firm, and he's involved too. And he gets fired from that, and the kid's almost like a loser. You know, the dad loves him. hopes for the best. He knows the kid's got problems, doesn't want to recognize the issues the kid's got going on, and thinks the kid can never do any wrong. He's a very sad figure. I mean, I'm just crying because the dad's like, you could do whatever you want. I believe in you. You know, you're not a villain. You're a hero to me. And he keeps encouraging the kid, but we just see the kid's going down this path because he's talking to this fat ex-vet who's telling him about when I got back home from Vietnam, they spat on us. They call us baby killers. So he's listening to this guy's BS. And it turns out to be that guy never was even in Vietnam. He joined up like 7 years after the war was over and served down in Texas. And the kid flips out because he's been lied to. And then his story, he becomes a homemade terrorist. He just goes to the dark side. He starts making your pressure cooker bombs. He starts shooting people. It's just all over the place with this guy. And then he has to cross paths with Frank Castle. And that was one of the best parts of that storyline. Did you see when... The thing is, he wires the counselor from the vet group with a bunch of Claymore mines. And Frank Castle finds him, and the guy's wired up, and they're talking to each other on the phone. And one of the best bits of dialogue in the acting was when Frank Castle is screaming at this kid. The kid's on the phone. He's like, I'm going to blow you up. I'm going to kill everybody. And Castle doesn't try to stop him. He's encouraging him. He's like, go ahead, blow me up. You're going to kill me. And the kid is like scared shitless. I think he's just like, he's on the other end of the phone, doesn't know what to do because here's Frank Castle looking at him in through the window. And he's going, go ahead, do it. Do it. You're going to kill this guy. You're going to kill me. I'm a United States Marine. You're going to take me down. Oh, I was like chills watching that scene. Right?
Oh, like I said, the intensity, and I loved how that kid, that he loved Frank, you know, like he was, that was his hero.
Yeah, he admired him, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's, like, you're telling me this right now, and I want to go watch it. I get a little choked up because the intensity was incredible.
I thought the thing was going to blow up in his face. I really did.
Yeah, but all those scenes in the entire series that were intense, like, you know, like, they were all, like, these gut-wrenching, like, holy moly, it was awesome.
And, no,
like,
and, you cared about all these people. You didn't even know them a couple episodes before. Now you care about the poor kid who can't find a job after serving the country, and you see him start turning towards the dark side. You care about the counselor guy who's trying to help him. You care about the guy's dad. You care about Frank Castle. You hear about Microchip. All in the span of 5 or 6 episodes, they've just introduced you to about a dozen characters, and every one of them is poignant, and everyone has a story, and you just get sucked into that world of it, man.
Yeah, even like Microchip's little kids. The little kid was starting to hit the daughter because they were all
angry. Bully. Yeah, he's had all this anger in him because he thought his dad was dead.
Yeah, can you remember, let me ask you this, Mitch, can you remember a movie or a series like that you actually cared about everybody?
Yeah, usually when you see a kid in a movie, it's usually the most annoying element of the story because they don't act like real kids. I mean, I got 2 kids of my own that are growing up now. The kids don't act the way they do in movies. They're always this smart alecky, gee whiz kind of thing, like a little comedian that's in a little kid's body, you know? It's like Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, I don't mean to jump ahead, but toward the last episodes, when Microchip is finally back with his family, and they're all just, you know, she's so mad at him, and they're all hugging, and then the daughter comes, and then even the little kid comes in there, and they all start crying. It was like, you know, I thought that was so, that was awesome, because it was kind of like, you know, like, enough, you know, they missed him so much, and like, they
the little boy, we're jumping all over, but he calls the tip line to rat on Frank Castle, who's been coming to their house under the guise of Pete Castiglione, because they see him on the TV, and he knows he was the Punisher, and the mother's like, let's just pretend we don't know anything about it, let's keep quiet, and the little daughter can't believe that he's the bad guy, and the son picks up the phone and rats him out, which inadvertently gets them captured by the enemy, and they become hostages. So the kid was just a little jerk, man.
Yeah, but he was hurting. He was hurting inside.
Oh, yeah, and then Frank's playing football with them, so you start to warm up.
What about that scene? Wait a second. What? How about that scene when Frank is trying to teach him a lesson with the knife?
Oh, God, he put it right up to his throat.
Yeah, and he goes, you want to be like a tough guy? And the kid actually says, kill me.
Yeah.
Do it. Like, and then he was like, he even felt like, oh, my God, this kid, you know, I said the wrong thing. You know?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Because you think the kid was going to pee his pants and back down, but that kid didn't care anymore. I mean, And I tell you, this stuff is so contemporary to the world we live in. There's like 20 different issues that you see on the local news every night happening in that show, from gun control to terrorism to kid violence to bullying to just government control over people. And it's amazing how topical it was, you know?
And you're right. It went into a few different directions, like sublines. It was a main, you know, Jigsaw was the main point. But like, every story it went to, from like the kid with PTSD, from the family, everyone was interesting. Like, you wanted a resolution for everything that was going on, you know?
Yeah. No, and it was crazy. Like I said, let's get back to the story parts there. First episode, great. Then we did the microchip stuff. I was starting to get a little dull with that, but then it kicked in because you find out Microchip's family, and then Frank comes over to help them out. And like you said, the mother's attracted to him because she's been a widow with two kids for over a year. Frank says he lost his family, so they have that common connection between the two of them of loss, and they both served. And, you know, he's being friendly towards her, but he's protecting her at the same time. And, you know, she tries to kiss him. And like you said, he says no, because in his mind, he's still married. And we forgot to mention, there's a bunch of flashbacks that happen. Frank can't stop thinking of how his wife's murdered before, she's pregnant, his kids. And there's a scene towards the end where he's being beaten up by the bad guy, the colonel, the general guy with the dead eye, with the dead blind eye.
And but when they show him at doing his wedding.
Yes. Frank is strapped to a chair. And the guy's beating the hell out of him. He's just punching him and punching him and punching him. And he tells the guy, you punch like a bitch. And the guy gets mad. And with each punch to the face, they flash. Every time it hits him in the jaw or the head, they show you what he's thinking about. And there he is with his wife. They're making love. He's dancing on the dance floor. He's in his dress uniform, his Marine dress uniform, spotless. And she's in her wedding gown. And that, I tell you, I got chills talking about it. That is so well directed, well written, well filmed. I don't know what
and
you want to
chemistry.
Say.
But the other thing is the chemistry between, like, the acting between that actress and John Bernthal. You felt that they really.
Yeah, even though she's not in it a lot, you honestly thought that was his wife and he loved her, because it's like, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was amazing to me. And it's like all set against a black background. It's like in a dream world. And the guy, I can't remember what he says to him. He's like, oh, he tells the guy to do it. He tells his other friend, he goes, you know, I want you to take me out. I want you to be the one to kill me. He doesn't care. And that's the thing. You can't, he's like, it's almost like the terrorists that are on the news. You can't stop these people because they want to die. You know what I mean? You can't kill an enemy that wants to save itself because they don't have anything to live for. He's got nothing to live for. And that's why when they put him up against the wall, they're going to shoot him. He's fearless. He don't care. He's staring you right in the face like, do it. And that's the scariest thing. And they don't. And then that's what frustrates the hell out of him. He would. And then there's a scene where his wife, he's holding her hand. It's kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy when Star-Lord sees his dead mother and she says, take my hand. He doesn't want to because she's, you know, she dies. His wife does the same thing. She said, his ghost wife basically says, you know, take my hand and come home. And
the other thing with the flashbacks is, you know, he wakes up like at 10:30. It's always his wife waking him up. It's in his head. But then you see her get shot as the story progresses, like the episodes progress. And we don't really know if that really happened or.
Well, that's what I was telling you. I was confused. Like, did I miss something? Because he sees her waking him up and she gets shot in the head. And then they show the carousel, but it's got the, you know, the crime scene that has like the markers where the people were hit, like the 1, 2, 3 where they found the bullets. I'm like, in the comics, his wife and kids get killed at a picnic in Central Park, and they killed in a crossfire with the gangsters. Correct. That's how it's. But in this one, I'm like, wait, did they get killed on a carousel? Did they come into his house and kill him and his wife and kids? I don't know what exactly happened. And like you said, he's so gone. There's really no real world anymore for this guy. He's in a fantasy world.
Right. So yeah, and that's what I think. And that's what I think. It's like, I think it's part of his PTSD and all his stuff. It kind of all kind of mangles all together. And let's also throw out there the actress the Hispanic actress that she was like the cop.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
she was awesome. You know what? I'm not all for sometimes of this tough chick kind of stuff. Sometimes it's a turn off for me. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. She worked to a T. She was awesome. Like, I really liked her attitude. And then, like, obviously she gets into a romance with Jigsaw, the guy who plays Jigsaw, and because she doesn't know who the hell he is. And we know Jigsaw. The funny thing is, I didn't know that that was going to be Jigsaw.
Well, you know what happened? I was looking at the reading something about it, and it said, "If don't ruin it yourself, don't go to IMDb because you're going to find out the character's name."
Yeah, right.
And I didn't do that, but then I started thinking about, because I was like, "Wait, who's this kid?" And I just looked him up real quick to see if I'd seen him in another movie, because he was really good too. The kid that played Billy Russo from War Buddy. And I didn't want to know, but I started figuring towards the end it was going to be Jigsaw, because I remember the storylines where they were almost the same character. I think there was a story. I got to go back and look at my Punisher stories. I could have swore there was a story once he fought his own brother or something. Maybe I'm getting confused. And
yeah, I don't know. You could be right. I'm not sure, but I didn't. I see. I don't watch any. I don't go to IMD or what any of those things, but I figured it was Jigsaw in the last. How good was that last?
Oh, well, yeah, when he's cutting his face up to shreds.
I did it. And then when I went to, then I start researching the whole thing. And then they say, they list the actor and they call him Jigsaw underneath. So I was like, yes, I was right. But, like, come on, let's talk about that last. I don't want to jump ahead, but that last fight between the Punisher.
All right. Well, let's go back then. So Frank is trying to save the senator, who Karen Page is involved. The terrorist kid, Lewis, he makes a pressure cooker bomb. He blows up a bunch of innocent people in a workplace. She calls him out in an article, calls him a coward. He goes on the radio. Then there's a senator who's on there about gun control. It just gets very topical. She draws him out, this kid Lewis, the terrorist. He goes after her. Frank Castle knows that they're using her as bait. And the kid comes after the senator. There's a big fight going on. Do you just want to jump ahead to the part where he's wired with a dead man switch in his hand? That part of it, when he's going to kill Frank and Karen Page?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have him cornered in a kitchen in a hotel. He gets shoved into a food locker or a freezer, and he's wired with his bomb. And, it's safe to run away now. So Karen Page runs away, but Frank doesn't go. He stands there, and he's looking through the glass. He's egging the kid on to kill himself. And we forgot to mention, the kid's been trying to kill himself for a while. You and I both said this. There's a scene where the actor who's playing this kid puts a gun in his mouth. Look, it's horrific to watch suicides on TV, and the whole thought of it in real life is tragic and sad. But I tell you, when I was watching that scene, I was cringing. I actually closed my eyes because I'm like, oh, my God. I don't want to watch this,
I thought he was going to do it. But like,
I was hoping that on set, I go, I hope that's a plastic gun, because this could, it was so realistic. If that's the way it goes, I just don't even want to think about it. It was horrific. He had and it went on for a while. It wasn't like a 2-second scene. He's putting the gun in his mouth. It's there. He's biting down. Oh, God.
And the camera angle. Don't forget the camera angle.
Yeah, I thought the back of his head was going to come off. So when at the end, now that he's actually cornered and he's no escape and he's got the dynamite or the plastic explosives and Frank's through the glass, and it's like, again, I think he wants to die. He wouldn't care if that explosion took him out as well, because Karen Page is calling him like, come on, you got to go. He's like, no, I'll stay here. And he's like, do it, kid, do it. Because he wants to die. He wants to go with his wife and kids and wherever, And the kid kills himself. Boom, blows himself to bits, It could have ended there. That's what I'm saying. There was enough for that story. That was a fine miniseries. You're done. But now it goes back into the other storyline about the drug cover-up and how the government's bringing in drugs, and they knew about it, and Frank knew about it, and that's why his wife and kids are killed, because, they wanted to cover up their mistakes, and Billy Russo, his fellow soldier, was in on it, and the microchips involved. Again, there's a lot of details. You got to watch it, but I don't know. It just goes all over the place. Because then there's the whole scene where Microchip fakes his own death. I thought he got killed. He got shot in the back. And his family thinks he's dead.
Right. And they thought he was dead, but it was kind of like a plan. It was a plan to get Frank there. Because that's what Frank wanted. Frank wanted them to get caught. And remember, he told him he wanted him to go back with his family.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the plan, that Frank was going to go there and do it. But then when they set up the cameras and all that stuff, they saw him. And he was taken. Let's go to that part when that high commanding guy who Frank blinded, when they show a flashback, you know, when back when they were in Afghanistan and he punches his eye out. That guy and Frank was, watch that scene again, Mitch. The blood that's everywhere and how that guy's screaming in his face and spit is flying. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. And you can just...
By the way, I've never seen someone bleed so much in my life like Frank Castle. He must have 40 gallons of blood. There's so much blood that comes out of this guy. I'm like, I think a normal person would have bled out and died by now. You know?
Well, he almost did die, because remember the cop that they take them back to his her parents' place.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and her parents save him. But how vicious did Punisher kill that guy when he rips out his eyes?
Oh my God! He puts his thumbs in and gouges his eyes out.
Oh my God!
Well, like I said, and you see, he's not shooting him with a gun. He takes him out with his hands, and then
what about when they bit him in the ear? Remember that?
Yeah, I kept thinking of Mike Tyson. Yeah, he did that. Well, there was another scene we forgot to say. You just had me remember when Frank Castle goes nuts. It wasn't the bomber one. It wasn't when he comes into the room and they're senators' people. He's trying not to kill. He will not kill police officers, okay? Because, you know, they're on the side of the good people. When he's like running from after the senator's attempted assassination, he takes the fire hose, and that's where it gets a little comic booky. He jumps down the stairwell with the fire hose to get away, and his arm almost gets ripped out. And that scene there. But there was
I love that. That, like, when his arm got like knocked out of its socket.
Yeah. I know what it was. Now I know how to clean a wound. I always wonder how people die from a bow and arrow. Did you see that part? They had to get the arrow at them. They had to cut them open.
Yeah, they had to take it out from the back.
And then they had to cauterize it and put alcohol. I'm like, holy Christ, I feel like now I could take care of somebody. So if you get shot with an arrow, I'm all set. I'll fix you.
Yeah, but that's the part of the Punisher. Like, he has incredible... I love... What did they say about his tolerance for pain? It's because... How did he say it? Because he doesn't care? Or, like, he said something about it in one of the episodes. This is why I got to go back.
No, wasn't it in Daredevil when he's on trial and they talk about his medical record?
No. There's a part on the... There's a part I remember. He talks about like his ability to take pain. It's like he says like something like he doesn't care. Like this is why I got to watch it again.
They said something. He constantly reliving the trauma of something in his head again and again and again. I could have swore that was in one of the shows. He's in constant pain almost.
No, it's just. It's awesome, though.
Yeah, okay, so anyway, we're jumping around. But now you got me wanting to go back and watch all 13 hours of it again because I'm trying to remember it all.
Me too.
Because the Karen Page character in Daredevil, I got to be honest, I could care less. Whenever I see her, I'm like, ugh, whatever. Fast forward this part, you know? But she was good.
She really wasn't that bad.
How defensive he got when Microchip, he's like, we got to go save her. We got to go. And he goes nuts like a dog. He starts like going, bouncing around the room because somebody might be hurting Karen Page. And I guess it's because she saved him. He owes her debt or something like that, you know?
Well, they have that weird bond thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, but it's kind of good to, like, Punisher can be so alienated from everything else that it kind of gives an attachment to Daredevil, you know? Like, it kind of keeps it in that world. But, Mitch, let's go to the last fight now. Now, let's go to Jigsaw versus Frank Castle at the end.
By the way, he mows down, like, all the armed security people that come and get him. He's just... There he's got guns. He's blowing people away left and right. Boom, boom. But wait, there was another scene where Jigsaw, eventually it's going to be Jigsaw, he comes to the house of the PTSD counselor guy, and he shoots him. There's a little gunplay. And Frank, it was all set up. Frank's across the way with a sniper rifle, and it was all set to take him out. And I love the scene where he passes the guy's wounded, the counselor's wounded in the arm. He's like, going to shoot me? He says, no. He goes, you have my word. And he slides the phone over, and they're talking on the phone. And then he leaves. I go, oh, he's going to kill the guy now. And he doesn't. He walks away from him. He goes, no, I'm a man of honor. That's my word. And that alone made him an interesting villain. It wasn't just like this bad guy from Die Hard that's just shooting people in the head. They actually have a code, even though there's a bad guy, you know? that they wouldn't just kill him. He goes, no, I told you I wouldn't kill you, so I won't. And he walks away. I'm like, that's so refreshing to watch.
We got to look at prior to that too. It was Jigsaw who cut. Remember his while he was, Punisher was taking that beating from the guy when he was tied to the chair. Remember
he cut the zip tie around to let him loose because he didn't want him to go out that way either. Because he made him promise that he would take him out. He said, "I want you to do it. I want you to be the one that kills me. He goes, "Don't worry, Frank. I'll make it fast." Because they served together. They were soldiers. They were Marines together. So they have a code of honor. And the guy goes, "Don't you dare. I've been waiting all my life. I'm going to be the one to do it. I'm going to make him suffer." The guy goes, "Screw you." And he cuts the zip tie and he lets Frank go nuts on him, you know? He could have shot the guy right there. He had a gun. He could have taken Frank Castle out. But he didn't do it because that wasn't the honorable thing to do. Was it, you know?
Yeah. And so when they fight at the end on the carousel.
Yeah.
How good.
I know, because I'm thinking to myself, he's got two kids as hostages. They're bleeding out. And the carousel music's playing. It's spinning around. That's movie for you. It's Hollywood. Because in reality, that carousel's not that big. They probably shoot each other in 10 feet. But because it's a movie, you got to go with it the way it's filmed. It's spinning around. He's trying to save the kids. They both get shot. But Frank doesn't kill the guy at the end. He says that line to him, "I want you to look in the mirror every day and remember this." I mean, granted, he smashes his head in a lot. I mean, guy's probably got brain.
Not just smashes his head, he rakes it against him. The guy just screams, like, "Yeah!" Just like, "Oh, my God, yes!"
Not once, not twice. I think he takes every square inch of his face to make sure there's not one part that's left untouched. He just keeps smashing into that mirror, you know?
But that's what makes it so now you can see where the Jigsaw character comes into play. So for the next season,
there's got to be a season two. There's got to be.
Well, of course. I know they're filming. They're going to be filming. It's already starting the production.
Well, here's the thing, though. Did you notice at the end, though, they tie it all up nicely and the government lets him go and they wipe his record? And Microchip goes back to his family. They're all reunited. Frank, they invite him to come in for Thanksgiving dinner, I think it is.
Oh, that was awesome.
He says no, and he just goes off into the dark, you know, the wanderer, the lone man, the Mad Max character out in the wastelands trying to make a way for himself. Are they going to play the lonely man theme? It would have been perfect, you know?
Yeah. And let's also throw this out there. They always did based on a character created by Jerry Conway, John Romita, and Ross Andrew,
yep.
I love how they gave him props. So I contact Roy and I talked to him and I said, "Roy, I want him to give me." He hasn't seen either one yet. He hasn't seen Justice League or Punisher yet. And he's like, "Oh, I'm not really I don't really care about that character." I said, "But I go, you got to watch it." And I go, "And then tell me what you think of it."
I'll be waiting to read that review on the Roy Thomas appreciation page on Facebook.
Yeah, but I'm dying to know what he thinks of it because I said to him that no, I think they did a good job. So it brought me back.
It was the John Bernthal screaming when he heard that you were a DC fan brought you back.
It was, yes, because I felt it. It was. There's nothing better. Ready? There's no movie. There's no Netflix series. There's no episode. Whatever. That is the best fake superhero thing ever made, ever for me. And it's going to be tough to break that off. Now,
would you own it at the Random Flea Market? If I'm a Punisher fan, in the next episode, we're going to do our holiday gift guide. But I'm going to give a sneak peek. So if I saw that, my wife, kid, whoever, myself, I watched that miniseries and I loved it. And I came to you and said, "Random Flea Market, man, I want to be into a Punisher fan. What books would I get? What toys would I get? Video games? What would you recommend?"
Right, I have a few of them right now. If you're gonna go Punisher, you gotta go all for the Spider-Man, the 129. I mean, in all grades. Now, let's just say, like, if you get it in a low grade, it's probably about $400. High grade, it can go over $1,000. High grade. You know, go for about two.
Is it really that much for a beat up copy? $400?
Yeah, that's a hot book. And I'm going to tell you this: this is great that we're talking about the Punisher. There's not one comic that I'm asked about more. Not 181 when I have my Amazing Fantasy 15, Hulk number one, all that stuff. The number one most asked comic book I ever get since I started in this business is Spider-Man 129. For some reason, that gets more action than any other comic I've ever had or that I've ever been asked for. So something about the cover, something about, obviously they love the Punisher, but it gets more action than 181. And I don't know why. They always ask about that.
Well, maybe and because that character didn't come into prominence until the last... I don't know. He's always been a cult figure, but he's because of the various bomb movies, he's really never had his chance to shine.
What actually happened to him, if you really want to talk about the Punisher, he was a cult figure in the 70s, obviously, right. In the 80s. But then the 90s, they milked him for everything he was worth.
Oh,
yeah. They gave him that hair that hangs in the back of your head, like a...
Oh, mullet?
Not a mullet, but he had like a...
A ponytail?
A ponytail. Remember that? They gave him this huge, long ponytail?
Well, I remember the 70s ones. He was always a scary character, even with the white go-go boots in the beginning. I'm like, what the hell? And then he showed up in mostly Spider-Man. He was in Spider-Man, then he was in the Spider-Man annual, where Spider-Man's hanging off the barbed wire
Frank
fence.
When Frank Miller got a hand of him on that Spider-Man annual and then in those Daredevils, he took Punisher to a different level.
Before that, too, is my old good buddy Mike Zeck and John Beattie and Stephen Grant, who were at this year's Terrific-Con. Stephen Grant was the writer. Then they had the Punisher going to Rikers Island. And that four-issue series that was so popular, they made a five-issue series.
Wasn't that after? Didn't that come after? Yeah, it came after Frank Miller's.
No, because it just celebrated its 30th anniversary this year. No, 80, what year was it? 85?
That was in the
80s. No, it was 86, 87, because I remember buying it on the racks. Yeah, it was after the Frank Miller Daredevil. That was in the earlier 80s because they had that drug storyline in it called Child's Play.
Right. And when Frank's in jail, too, they were like,
I think that was the setup, right? He gets arrested in that. This book's were tighter continuity, and he gets thrown in jail, and that's where the storyline picks up.
And doesn't he throw the order in the guy's face? Remember that?
It was the Punisher miniseries, and then they had a second Punisher series. There was a graphic novel called Return to Big Nothing. Then there was the War Journal. And then at one time, he had two books going on at the same time. Punisher, War Journal.
He had three. Mitch, he had the Punisher, he had War Journal, and then he had Armory.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. And then one of the things I just saw this weekend in New Haven, I was at a comic booth. It was your boy from J&S Collectibles, Steve. And he had the two magazines out from the 70s, Marvel Premiere or Marvel Preview.
Marvel Preview, right? There was the Marvel Preview.
Yeah, the black and white magazines both featured
those
the Punisher.
Awesome. Those are great.
So, I mean, are those worth anything? Going back to my scenario about Christmas shopping.
Yeah, you're talking about $50 to $100 a piece.
Okay, so so there you go. And then, what about any Punisher? There was a Punisher action figure, wasn't there, from Toy Biz?
Yeah, there's been a few. I mean, now there's a ton of. Punisher, there's a ton of Punisher
Marvel Legends,
but I'm going to tell you this right now. I might even be tempted. I don't get a lot of this stuff for me, but I might even be tempted to get a John Berthold figure. Like they're going to make like a Hot Toys one or whatever.
I saw that.
Like,
yeah.
And it's just fully articulated and he looks awesome. And you're just like, I might even be tempted to buy one of those for myself. You believe that?
Yeah, I believe it. I do the same thing. I looked on Amazon when the show was over to see what they had for Punisher.
I went on the frigging guy's Twitter, John Berthold's Twitter.
Johnny Berthold.
Johnny Berthold. And did you know this? Here's something cool about it. The girl that he ended up marrying is the niece of Kurt Angle, the professional, the WWF wrestler and the former gold medal winner.
I did not know that.
And a lot of their Twitter pages, like they call him Uncle Kurt, and they have pictures of him and Kurt Angle, like they're together. And now all of a sudden, I'm a John Berthold fan.
Let me tell you my exchange with John Berthold, and this is how nice a guy he is. 2011 or so, Walking Dead's about to premiere the next night on the 13th of October. Halloween night it was. I can't remember what exactly it was. I'm there at the press roundtable at New York Comic Con. I only went to the press roundtable to interview Frank Darabont, the director and who was producing the show, because he did Shawshank Redemption, The Mist, and a couple other things. He also wrote Indiana Jones screenplays that never got used. So I went to interview him. He's sitting at the table with Robert Kirkman, who writes The Walking Dead and Marvel Zombies. I didn't even recognize Kirkman. I didn't even care who he was. You got to understand, The Walking Dead wasn't on yet. People didn't know what it was, what it was going to be. They just knew it was a zombie show. Nobody cared. So Darabont gets up. Kirkman gets up. Who sits down at the table? It's me and four other quote-unquote reporters or podcasters. But John Bernthal and Andrew Lincoln, the stars of The Walking Dead, who plays Rick and Shane. Everybody packed their stuff up and left because nobody knew who these two guys were. I'm the only one still sitting there, and I'm about to leave too because I was supposed to go interview this guy from Lucasfilm. And I felt so bad. They both looked at each other, the two actors, Bernthal and Lincoln. They look at each other like, what the hell, we smell? No one was there. Everyone got up and left, and I'm the only one sitting across from them. And they both look at me. They go, well, you got us all to yourself. And I go, oh, yeah, right. What is this about now? They go, The Walking Dead. I go, what's that about? And Andrew Lincoln's English, and he's got a British accent. So he goes, oh, I play a sheriff down in Atlanta, and we fight zombies. And I go, wait, an English sheriff in Atlanta fighting zombies? No, no, I have an accent. And I go, yeah, okay. They go, don't you want to talk to us? I go, look, I really got to go. And Bernthal goes, come on, brother. Don't you want to talk to me, man? And I go, I don't like zombies, guys. They really give me the willies. I don't like the whole Walking Dead thing. And they go, oh, okay. Well, I go, well, good luck with it, man. I hope it works out. And Andrew Lincoln goes, I hope so, too. I got a mortgage to pay. And Bernthal goes, come on, brother. Just sit for 5 minutes, man. And I go, no, I got to go. But good luck to you guys. And they were sitting by themselves at the table. Nobody was with them. And I walked out feeling like shit. I'm like, I should have talked to those two guys. Became the biggest show on TV. Everybody loves it. Year later, I'm sitting across from Andrew Lincoln. He's staring at me. He goes, don't I know you? I'm like, no. He goes, you're the chap that got up and left last year. You don't want to talk to me. I said, yeah, I had to go. He goes, I bet you're kicking yourself now. And Bernthal wasn't even there. I'm like, oh, man, do I feel bad about this. So now every time I see him, I go, I should have talked to him. Because if I knew he was going to be the world's greatest actor to ever play the Punisher, I would have sat there all day to listen to him go,
I know, that's one thing we got to do. I want to get that guy, and I want to have him scream like...
Oh, I'll tell you right now, go on by the Omnibus, if you want, going back to the gift guide. It's on sale at Amazon. I think it's only like $76. It includes the Spider-Man appearances, the magazine black and white appearances. It includes the Daredevil stories and the Zek miniseries as well. That's a good book. And then there's this
guy. Yes, I'm actually going to look at that. I'm probably going to order that. And to throw this out at you,
what?
If you're looking for something a little bit more cheaper, and you can probably find them in like back issue bins, you can, if you go, remember The Essentials, Volume 1, The Punisher. That's a cheaper version, obviously, a black and white version of that omnibus. But what makes it so cool, it's exactly what you said. It has all those early appearances of all the Punisher stuff, all in in the Marvel previews, all the early Spider-Mans, the Daredevils, all that stuff. And I think it even has the limited series in there, too. It has even those spectacular Spider-Man. And don't forget about Captain America, 241.
Oh, yeah, when he meets Cap, he won't fight Cap. And then we talked before, the Punisher goes into the Civil War and won't fight Captain America because he's such the ultimate soldier. Frank Castle can't bear himself to fight him. That's another storyline, too. But there's a lot of missteps, too, with the Punisher, too. They have the Punisher in Space that came out a couple years ago, which is kind of a science fiction story done by Mark Teixeira. The art might be good, but it's just stupid. The whole
what idea. About when they were trying to bring the Punisher back, and he was some sort of, like, ghost guy? Remember
yeah.
that?
And then they did one where he's Frankenstein, where he fights monsters. They did it like an Elseworld or a what-if storyline where Frank Castle's like Frankenstein. That's stupid. You know?
Yeah, that's stupid. What about that when he fights Ghost Rider, which was awesome, and Ghost Rider tries to give him the penance there, and he's like, all your regrets, all your, like...
He had none.
Do you remember that? And it doesn't work on him?
Yep. Wasn't that the Spirit of Vengeance storylines?
Yes, because he has no regrets.
No, he doesn't. Didn't he become part of the Fantastic Four at one point when they had to get a new Fantastic Four when they were all gone and they recruited Ghost Rider, The Punisher and like
two it was Ghost Rider, Wolverine, Spider-Man, and the Gray Hulk. There wasn't Punisher in that.
Oh, all right. But there's been a lot of stories. I mean, just stick to the basic stories where he's going around shooting people. You don't make him a superhero.
So, like, a lot of those, a lot of those books, comics in the 90s, stay away from those. Because that's when he got too... But see, that's what happened to the Punisher. He got so big and they just saturated him that he just died off.
Yeah, it's almost like Deadpool. They just went nuts with him, you know?
But now it's a resurgence again for him. Because I always knew if you do the Punisher right, he can be one of the greatest comic characters. Like, he would fit in the movies. Even back in those days when you weren't supposed to use superpowers or anything, it would look corny. The Punisher was always very accessible.
I always thought
Blade took the Punisher's place. You know, when they did Blade back in the day before X-Men, I said, watching that Wesley Snipes film, which they did a great job, I said, that should have been the Punisher.
Well, they just can't make him Rambo. Just don't make him like this big gun machine, killing machine, like a shark. You got to get the story, the human part, and that's what a lot of people missed, you know?
But now he's here, he's good to go, and I'm going to be hard-pressed to see if there's anything that's going to beat this Punisher series. The only thing that probably can beat it, maybe Punisher Season 2, but I don't know. I just can't. This is done so incredibly well, directed so well, camera so well, perfectly casted. I'm a loss. I don't know if there's anything that's going to beat this. I'm a loss for words, Mickey.
You go. And I'm glad it took Frank Castle to fight the powers of DC Universe to bring you back to the fold.
Yeah, and I have to admit, Punisher's always been in my top 5, top 10 greatest characters anyways that I loved always. I love the essential Frank Castle, and all right. Not all the crap, but that's why I love that next Netflix series. They made the essential.
All right, let's wrap this up. It's been an hour-long Punisher holiday special here on the Power Cosmic. Let's do the who's got the best John Bernthal scream. Ready?
Me first. Okay.
No, I don't think that's more of a scream like he's getting his teeth pulled. I think it's more of a like he's pounding one out like he's really constipated. He's
when he was shooting the gun. Oh no, then he has a couple of them.
It almost sounds like a cat in heat. It's like moo moo. He starts doing this M sound like moo.
I think I want an AK-47 for
We don't do that, John. We don't need powers, lead projectile firing machines to kill people with the Power Cosmic. We just need the pure fandom that radiates from us. Every single pore of our body.
Ooh.
That will overpower the toughest critic, the hardened fan, the most cynical of critic out there, just to listen to the pure passion on the Power Cosmic every week that pervades. Any other alliteration I can think of? No. Right?
And that's that.
That's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC, the folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.